Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, just a quick warning that this episode is a bit of a heavy one. It contains depictions of financial abuse, emotional abuse, domestic violence, sexual assault, and rape culture. So please listen with care. Hello and welcome to Ghosts of Boyfriends Past podcast. I am Liz Best.
Yes, and Tom Harris with you. Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us on this main episode. Now, normally, you, if you're a regular reader, you might be missing the cold open that we normally do. Normally, Tom and I will discuss a particular topic of dating and kind of shoot the shit, I guess, a little bit about it. But today we've decided to forego that because we've got a little bit of a heavier episode and I feel like it should just stand on its own.
Yeah, some stories, some ideas are strong enough or important enough to stand on their own two legs and don't need our tomfoolery off the top. So we're going to launch straight into it. Thank you for coming along. And if you need to sit this one out, you heard the warning off the top, fine. I get it. I've read this story myself. It's heavy. And if you come back next week, good luck to you. I don't begrudge you that. The world's a hard, dark place at times. And if you need to skip out on a little podcast episode, so be it.
And other than that, just I guess we've said it before, but do listen with care. The reason why I've decided to put this episode on air is because I feel like it's important. I feel like it's continuing discourse that we're talking about specifically in Australia, but the world over about violence against women. And I think it is something that should definitely be heard. So first of all, I just want to say a massive thank you to Juanita, yes, who is the person who has written this story in. She took a lot of time to write it out in great detail. I'm going to mention that I have cut it down a little bit just for the length of the episode and also because some things I think needed to be censored a little bit. You'll understand when we get there. But in the meantime, here we go. It's going to be rough. Buckle in. But I think it's really important.
So Zane's going to join us.
I forgot to say I was so into like just getting into how serious this is that Zane is actually going to join us on mic.
Uncle Zane's here and ready to get real angry.
Yeah, because this is basically one of the episodes where I'm going to read it out. So we do like to have another voice to ask questions when that happens. All right. Hello, Liz, Tom and Zane. I fully understand if my story is too heavy to be told on air. However, I feel it needs to be shared with the continuing escalation of family domestic violence in this country. Also, in light of the recent and ongoing investigations into the Queensland Police Force and their treatment of not only female officers but also victims of domestic violence. One of those officers stood down was a classmate of my ex's. Having said that, one of the highest ranking police stood beside me in court to take down my ex as well and was one that helped get the investigation underway. So there are good ones out there, however a lot that should never have been given a badge in the first place.
Okay. I think that's pretty clearly said. I'm fairly anti-police.
Yes.
And the establishment. But that doesn't mean that good individuals don't exist within that framework.
Yes, I agree.
And just to touch on the opening sentence, I don't believe there's any story that's too big or ugly to have not just on this podcast, but to be heard anywhere. The bigger, the uglier, the more important kind of.
Because this shit thrives in the shadows, as we've said many times podcast before.
Anyone who writes in or has in the past will in the future. Don't try not to apologize about having an experience or having a story.
Yeah. The reason we share this is that if anyone finds themselves in this situation, they feel a little bit more prepared to take the steps they need to.
Yeah. Okay. She says, let me start by taking you back to the beginning. I started going out with Voldemort, we're calling him, when he was in senior and I was a first year hairdressing apprentice. But I soon tired of him, but even back then, and thought he was a dick. And if I'm being completely honest, at the age of 16, I thought his pink Velcro watch band was a bit of a deal breaker for me back then.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So this is okay. Can I ask how old Juanita is now? Like, are we going way back? Like,
this is way back.
Okay. Cool.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. At that point, it lasted 4 months and wasn't very serious. I was also 16 and very busy socializing and drinking. I ran into him one night when my friend when he'd left school and joined the police academy, and seeing that his shoe and watch game had improved somewhat, I was happy to go along with his pursuits.
She knows what she likes.
Yeah, look.
Shoes and watches.
Exactly.
If only it was that easy.
Yeah, that's right.
He ended up being my first serious boyfriend, the one I lost my virginity to, the one my mother pushed me towards because she approved of him, the school prefect, the policeman.
That's rough. I mean, that's great when you find it.
Yes.
But it's a rough situation to get out of once you need to get out of it. Yeah.
We went out for 7 years. I was totally smitten with him. I encompassed all of his friends to be in my new circle and eventually let my circle of friends slide, which, oh, that breaks my heart. Everything for me revolved around him, how to make him happy and make me feel like I was worthy of him, because I'd be told by everyone all the bloody time, in caps, what a great bloke he was.
I think that's a danger of these kind of young relationships. Because you're growing up together, you're kind of becoming adults together. So if you're in a situation where one personality is ruling kind of the dynamic that you have, you can lose yourself in that dynamic.
Yeah.
And it's just part of developing the personality that you have as an adult.
And what personality you have as a kid might be a great person, and as you grow, you turn into a right shitheel.
Even when you're younger, you take advice from older people as well. Like if I started dating someone now in my 30s, a brand new person, and my mum was like, oh, she's really good. Mom, I don't care. Let me arrive at my own opinion. Yeah. But when you're early 20s and your mum's going, oh, but he's a prefect and he's joining the police.
To the best school and he's
I don't know. My mum tried to push a few girls on me and I was pretty set against it.
But that's my point. We get advice and you do get a bit muddled.
Yeah. Okay, so then he wanted to take a break when I was 21 and naturally I was devastated. Yet during this time, he would still see me and sleep with me and then ghost me. I should have ended it then, but I was in love and didn't think that I deserved any better. All I wanted to do was marry him, have children, and build a family and live happily ever after. My own upbringing had not been very stable, so I just wanted to create that perfect fairy tale. And she's written this in capital letters, eye roll.
I think that eye roll is very much in retrospect.
Absolutely.
Yes. Because that's hindsight. That's the story we all want when we're 21.
Yep.
Meet someone, fall in love, marriage, house, kids, dog.
Yes.
Grow all together.
I haven't had to go through the heartbreak of trying to buy a house in this country. Yeah. It just happened to me. Yeah. I didn't have to try and find it just happens. Yes.
Yep. When we were married, it was the first time that we had lived together. The trouble started, the trouble started when we got back from our honeymoon and he didn't come near me in bed for 3 weeks. I was thinking, what the fuck have I done? The anxiety built up, I was questioning myself, stroking his ego, looking for breadcrumbs as to why I'm being abandoned like this with absolutely no explanation other than I'm tired. She's put a bit of commentary in here in hindsight going, nah, mate, that's called the silent treatment. It's a manipulation tactic used by narcs to keep their victims in line and under control. Wish I'd known that then. Anywho, moving on.
Good commentary. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a little bit here that I would like to question as well.
Mm-hmm.
What language was she using to question? Like she said that she was like stroking his ego and trying to figure out what was wrong. Like were they direct questions or was she just trying to initiate?
I don't know.
Yeah. And I think that's, I guess that's the, when you're dealing with manipulation is like actually calling it out by asking the direct questions like, why haven't we had sex this week when we're back from our honeymoon where we had sex multiple times?
Well, he did respond with, I'm tired. So I guess a question has been asked if they can have the sex.
Yeah. That's fair. And if it's just a nonchalant response, then that's what you have to deal with.
So we had 4 kids in 7 years and I worked all the way through with all of the pregnancies. I didn't have the best health in between and it was remarkable to me that the praise was absolutely lavished on Voldemort for sticking around and doing his fatherly duties. That really fucking blew my mind. They were his kids. Mm. I was made to feel selfish whenever I was ill and it was all my fault every time I got sick.
Yeah, that sucks. Who was doing the praising? Yeah. Was it like his co-workers and his family or was it her family as well?
I just feel like it's everyone the way that she talks about it.
Look, I get it when like...
I think she's just surrounded by not good people.
Well, when I was growing up, when fathers looked after kids, it was still called babysitting.
Yep.
Yes.
And that still is.
It wasn't
that
just...
That still happens.
Those people still call it daddy daycare. Like, it's your parenting.
Oh, you're giving mum a break, are you? Yeah. No, I'm watching my child. Yeah. I am being a present father.
I'm just living child. And I have some children.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's the thing. Like, I want to know... What I would be curious to know is whether she viewed that... as that at the time or whether this again is in retrospect, whether she was putting that on herself as well.
Yeah, not sure.
Yeah. So.
So basically she said he would make me feel guilty about my medical expenses as though I was doing it on purpose. Yet if you look up all the things that I was suffering from and looked at it as a big picture, it would have been clear to anybody that at the time there was abuse going on there. But alas, they don't treat things individually and they treat you as a hypochondriac. He'd complain about money all the time, yet he took a promotion but lost $15,000 a year to take said promotion. Mm. Yep, but I'd better not buy presents for the kids on their Christmas or birthdays, and I had to stop making memories for the kids because they cost money. We were all supposed to save money all of the time. I had to give everything over that I ever spent for my whole married life. I did not have passwords to anything because I was told repeatedly that I wouldn't understand how it all works, that it's just better if he looks after everything because he's the one that's getting paid. I did not have my own bank account that was mine and he still had access to everything. Even my business bank account, he had it all. There's so much I could go into. He took my business from being in the black to being in the red. Some more background. I had a tremor disorder called essential tremor. Mm-hmm. Eventually, medication was no longer holding it at bay and the tremor started to affect my hairdressing and makeup business. So I got a deep brain stimulator implant. Now, I looked this up and I put a little definition. So a deep brain stimulation is a neurosurgical procedure that uses implanted electrodes and electrical stimulation to treat movement disorders associated with Parkinson's disease, essential tremor, dystonia and other neurological conditions. Doctors may use DBS for movement disorders or neuropsychiatric conditions when medications have become less effective or if their side effects interfere with a person's daily activities. So I just thought I'd clarify that there. And so Juanita continues, the actual stimulator itself can greatly affect speech. So I did require speech therapy after the surgery and in my case, my speech became quite slurred. That asshole used to say in front of the kids that I was just drunk and I needed to lay off the wine and how much have you had to drink today, etc., encouraging the kids to say the same and the kids would then start on me.
When I read this part at my abode by myself, I got to this part and I got up. I remember having like a physical reaction to their sort of anger at this guy. And I remember just walking around my house, I couldn't sit down and keep reading for a little bit. It's obviously someone's getting their brain fuddled around with, right, in a medical arena. It's probably going to be something something semi-serious that's wrong with you, right? Lend the girl a fucking hand. So
it's essentially brain surgery. Yeah, she's had an implant.
I don't know. Bit of bullying never hurt anyone.
Yeah.
You know, getting the kids involved in it is that is the first time here where I can't go,
yeah, there's no defending.
It could have just been societal pressure that got you to that point. But that's really kind of like alarm point number one.
I might press
the button, but I'm not going to. As a friend, knowing nothing more than what's been shared in this one, that's where I would call him out here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I've just realized that I haven't blanked where he went to work. So I'm just going to say overseas.
Okay.
He went off to work overseas, leaving me here to run and organize everything with the kids, all their activities, their school, and still work. He would deposit an allowance for me for groceries and fuel, and it was never enough, and I'd have to plead for more money and then be dragged over the coals as to what I'm spending it on. He would get irate if he couldn't reach me, or if I didn't answer the phone, or if I took too long to respond to a text. It wasn't like I was busy or anything. I fell asleep at a red light one day. I was so exhausted. I was running on negative empty. I tried to say to him one day, mate, I'm a hairdresser. I work with my hands and I can't, if my hands are busy, I can't be texting to respond to you. And his response was, well, you need to answer and go back to what you're doing. He'd come back from overseas and expected to be treated like someone special. And I was like, please just jump back to being part of this family, pick up where you left off. But no, he wanted a song and dance and everyone to bow down to him. He couldn't handle just being an ordinary run-of-the-mill white guy, nothing special. He had such a fucking God complex. Now, obviously, she's looking at this in hindsight.
Yeah.
So that's why when the various stints were up, he broke his neck, not literally, what she's saying is when his overseas stints were up, he did everything in his power to get back to there because, as he used to say, he was somebody over there. To tell you the truth, I was kind of glad when he went back because it meant that I didn't have to deal with him daily. I had brains.
It's a really important point to call out to yourself.
Yeah.
When them not being in the same room as you is a relief.
That's what back in my episode, Emma used to say to me is that when she said when I started staying in hotel rooms and would feel happier alone, that was a trigger for her to know what was happening. Anyway, Juanita continues, I had my brain surgery in 2012 and then I had a spinal fusion in 2013. I was off work for 6 weeks and in that time, he never came home.
I'm angry now.
Yeah. I found out he was in the middle of a hot and heavy affair over there that he couldn't tear himself away from. I only found this out after I left him, though.
Yes, okay.
During all of my recovery, with all her bloody kids, by the way, during all of my recovery, I'd said to the surgeon, I just want to be able to ride a horse when we went to the USA, as I had squirreled away enough money to be able to pay for a 3-week trip to America and have some spending money. It was partly for work and partly a holiday. I paid for it in cash. He was furious when he found out that I had saved that much money without him knowing. He tore strips off me and then he didn't talk to me for 2 whole weeks.
Oh, the dream.
But
unfortunately, when you're in that relationship and somebody it's punishment, and then you really suck up to them and you like why are you doing this? And you turn your affection up because you're like, what the fuck have I done wrong?
Yeah.
Like it's like a Pavlovian response. He was quite happy, though, whenever we went out to walk up to the counter when I was buying something, dump things down that he had picked up and say, she's just going to pay for that, thanks, and walk out, though.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to diagnose anyone, but he's certainly behaving like a narcissist.
Yep.
And whether or not that is a learned behavior or an innate behavior, I don't know. I don't know this person. I want to know what he used to reel her back in. Was it like love bombing, or like were there like dramatic gestures that he made when they were alone? Because a lot of what seems to be happening is him humiliating her in public.
But I think it's the financial abuse. Like she doesn't have enough money to get out.
Yeah, but Zane's wondering what.
Yeah, what's keeping. What is keeping Juanita emotionally connected to this person.
I think
because
I've never been in a physically abusive relationship, but I know from a coercive one that I kept thinking it would go back to what it was at the start, which was nice.
And I guess that's, and this might just be because when Juanita wrote this, it was about the bad things that have happened. So the good things have not been mentioned. So I can't go like, let's weigh up how much the good meant to me then and how much I want to get back to there.
Yeah.
Because when it started with after the honeymoon, a week of denial, like that is almost immediate kind of a negative feedback.
Okay. Yeah, you're right.
So like that's – it's a perverse interest on my behalf of like what – is the justification for this guy to maintain his level of control? Because I can't imagine in my head either doing this or putting up with it.
I think it's also a level that you've also never been beaten down that low.
No, and that's me.
When you don't believe like you're worth anything, you don't believe that you deserve better.
And there's probably extra wrinkles of societal expectations that when you get married, you stay married, or the marriage must work. And when he's the father of your children, all you want to do is make him, I don't know, stay or happy or play or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. So this is where it gets a little bit rough. Mm-hmm. So brace yourselves. I'm just going to get to the main event, she says, the thing that turned my world upside down, because there seems to be too many instances of his abusive behavior that I can get sidetracked on, and I don't want to bore you with those details. Let me start by saying that although there was much financial, emotional, and verbal abuse, the physical abuse was limited, but it certainly did happen. He would put me in police wrist locks so roughly that I thought he was going to break my hand. He once did that police thing where they grab you up near your collarbone to subdue me. And when people came towards us, he made out like he was helping me. He did this in our own house at a party. Anyway, the night in question, and I'm sorry if I slip in and out of third person as I recount the incidents as a coping mechanism. I went to bed as usual. He was in bed. I rolled over to kiss him goodnight and I rolled back to go to sleep. He rolled over on top of me and started kissing me so roughly it was virtually like he was eating my face. He was biting my face so hard all over and I was like, what the fuck? And I kept saying, stop it, I don't want to, and trying to push him off. But then he grabbed my hands and pinned them above my head with his hands. Alarm bells are ringing in my ears. He ripped down her pants. I could hear the noise of her own blood screaming through her ears in terror. Now, I've cut this bit out because I think it's too graphic to say on a podcast. I basically said he then uses his other hand to brutalize her in ways that literally tore her skin. I stopped asking for him to stop and tell him that he was hurting me as it was falling on deaf ears. No matter how many times I said it, it would not make him stop. He never uttered one word the whole goddamn time. I prayed to God that my kids wouldn't come in and see what he was doing to her. But then, on the other hand, I also hoped they would, so that he would stop. And I didn't want to scream and frighten them, and I didn't know what he would do.
That is a really horrifying position to be in.
Yeah.
That is – I'm hearing this for the first time. That sucks.
Yeah. I've read this three times, and I'm still getting really choked up listening to it.
As have I. And it manifests into a sort of hopeless anger for me. And if you can hear the recounting of this rape, this attack, and you can square it in your mind without the idea of, gee, I hope my children walk in to interrupt this, but also I don't want my children walking in to interrupt, to see this, to see their father doing this. So if you can't square this in your mind and apply it to your partner, your mother, sister, anyone, any female that you hold close, I don't know where to begin with you. I don't know. I can't go further.
Yeah.
was really, at that point, the only hope she had was her kids.
Yeah. I hope my daughter walks in to see me getting raped by their father. Gee, I hope that happens because I need that would stop this. But also, how the hell can you?
Yeah.
Horrifying.
How can you ask for that? Like, how can you? But those are the thoughts. Those are the two thoughts going through her head at that time. She didn't want these thoughts. She didn't ask for these thoughts. That's what she's praying for.
Okay. There was one point during the ordeal that she was hovering above herself, looking down, hoping that she would just die because the pain that she was in was too much. I couldn't move. I'd frozen. I could see his face from the light of the ensuite, and it was a contorted mask, bloody, frightening. I didn't recognize him. He continued to assault her, forcing violent penetrative sex on her until she almost passed out in pain. When he'd finished, she was bleeding, and he just rolled over and went to sleep. Sorry.
It's all right, darling. If you need to hand over the phone, I can continue reading.
It's all right. I struggled into the ensuite and shut the door and bawled my eyes out silently, my mind absolutely fried with disbelief with what had just happened, coming to terms with the fact that I had just been raped and that my husband was the one who raped me. Logically, I knew the right thing to do was to go get a rape kit done ASAP, but number one, that would mean me having to get out of the room past him, and I had no idea what he would do if he saw me try to leave. And number two, our second child was in senior year, and I knew that having his dad be charged and sentenced with rape would greatly impact my son and how hard he had worked to try and get into his chosen uni, and I wasn't going to let this asshole take that away from him. He'd already been too cruel to him over the years. So
It's very noble. It's a very noble position to have, that you are looking out for your boy, your youngest, so much that you're like, no, I can't. That's so noble to do. It might be wrong. It might be right. It might be wrong. But it's fucking noble to care for your child so much that you would rather, cocoon yourself from reporting from what happened to you.
She puts it quite eloquently for something so horrific. She says, so as I eventually had a shower and watched my blood go down the drain, I thought that my hopes for justice were also going down that plug hole. The next morning, when I came out of the bathroom, he was standing opposite side of the bed, and I said to him, you raped me last night. I could have gone and got a rape kit done and you'd be going to jail. You would lose your job. Do you understand? You raped me.
That's big. Mm-hmm. I will applaud her for doing that. Straight up.
I know. Yeah. I know. That's so brave. He just threw his hands in the air, stared at me, raised his eyebrows and said, what, you'd lose the house if you did that? I knew from that moment that I was going to have to push this shit deep down if I was going to be able to keep going for the kids and for my business. I had nothing and I didn't think that anyone would believe me. Although I had said many, many times what an asshole he was and the things he'd done, because I am a happy, funny people person, they thought that I was joking or exaggerating or would side with him, calling me out for being high maintenance, which would also boost his inflated ego. So keep going I did, until I was forced to close the doors on my salon due to ongoing back issues. Voldemort was still working overseas at this time and he'd been there for basically 10 years. Even when he promised his son that was in senior year at the time of the assault that he would be home for him to do grades 11 and 12... the same as he had been for his other son, his blatant favourite child, he lied and signed up for another stint without consulting anyone in the family. So when I was forced to close the salon, we had the youngest still in school, and my husband told everyone that I needed to move overseas with him to just relax and recuperate and put my feet up, when in fact, when I did go there, I had no support, I was isolated, and I had to depend on him for everything. And over there, he was hero worshipped, and I had nothing and nobody. So our baby girl went into boarding school, and we did move over there, even though I was scared. I said to his sister, who at the time was one of my best friends, I showed her where I had hidden money in my wardrobe if anything had happened to me. She'd been a witness on many occasions of his foul treatment of me. When I arrived overseas, he
went to Vorda.
Mm-hmm.
Does the sister come back into the story?
I don't remember, yeah, but possibly. When I arrived overseas, he was all happy, happy, joy, joy at the airport and in the compound for everyone to see. Literally, as soon as the door closed behind me and I put my suitcase down into the room, his words to me were, with a look of contempt on his face, "You're in my world now." I kid you not, he said this through gritted teeth and a snarl. I started literally shaking. His job over there was, I'm going to redact the shit out of this job, but it's real high up.
Yeah.
It's real high up in a policey kind of area. So not only was he actually, so it's not a police, it's high up at a national level of what he was doing. Yes. So not only was he an ex-cop, he used to, I think I'll say this, he used to head up the intel unit in the prison over where I was at the time. He was in charge of security and had national clearance in that country. I was fucked, she said. No one would ever believe me above him here, which I guess was his plan all along. He did not utter a single word to me other than when we were out in public for 3 weeks. In public, no one would ever know anything was wrong. At home, I slept in the second room with the door locked. His cruel behaviour continued until an ex-friend suggested we go to marriage counselling. She could see that I was about to pull the pin. So as he was now all about saving face, he made a big song and dance to everyone that he's trying to save the marriage and that we'd start flying back to, I'm going to take the place out here, staying back home once a month for the counselling. At the end of first session, the doctor asked us to write down all of the things that we don't like about the other person for the next session. We get back there and the doctor is ready to read the lists out. He has 5 nondescript things about me written down. She said, fucking hard eye roll, you wanker. I had 3 foolscap pages and the very last thing that I had written down was that he had raped me. This was the first time that I had ever voiced this in any form, what he had done to me. When the doctor got to that, he stopped. He looked at me, looked at Voldemort and said, I don't know if I can read this out loud. And as he said that, Voldemort clenched his fists and punched them into the couch. I was standing because my back was aching and watching him throw his head back and raise his eyebrows. The doctor then read what I had written about him raping me and the doctor said, what do you have to say about that? He said, I don't think it's as bad as she's making it out to be.
What a prick.
What a motherfucking piece of shit. But. I don't think it's as bad as she's making it out to be when this woman literally watched her own blood go down the fucking plug hole.
I don't think it's as bad as she made it out to be. She literally just wrote down on a piece of paper, he raped me.
Yeah.
Yes, there's and no details. There's
that's
no...
all it needs to be. The detail is almost negligible. Like, the detail can only make it worse.
Yes, that's right.
But those words are already setting the bar of abuse so high.
Yeah, you're right. More details doesn't make it better. Hey, guys, I raped someone, but wait until you hear the details. Yeah. It's not going
to
be...
There's
it's not
context,
gonna,
guys.
I don't mean to laugh, but it's like, yes, sorry fucking for hell, flippant. That is so fucking ridiculous,
but it's
right?
It's true, right? It's true.
And like, the gall to say that to a counsellor.
Yeah. Yep. He's a dickhead.
I'm so concerned for where this goes from here. I'm hoping for good, positive, responsible outcomes. But I'm really worried.
Okay. Yep. Noted. I'm not. Yep. Let's get back into it then. The worst thing about all of this is that I then had to get back on a plane with him and go back to our home overseas.
Oh.
Things went on for the best part of 2016 very strained, coming back for counselling, me bending over backwards to try and put things behind me and just move on, still being treated awfully. And then I put the question out to him about him having an affairs and he came clean with it and he admitted it. I was told by one of his work colleagues that he slept with plenty of the local girls as well as the colleagues who were also fucking around on their spouses. While you're making this big song and dance about going to marriage counselling and how you're saving the marriage and you're such a good guy, you're still out banging someone else but making out your wife is the problem. The day he told me that, I was due to fly back to Brisbane for a specialist appointment. I packed up all my stuff that would fit and I had no intentions of ever going back, only to pack the rest of my stuff and make sure that my cats were being returned home. As soon as I got back home, I contacted a close friend who was a very high-ranking police officer who also used to be Voldemort's old boss, and I told him the whole sordid saga. He told me that he would help me in any way he could. When I decided 2 weeks later that I wanted to press charges, my friend pointed me in the right direction and got the ball rolling. I needed to show my girls that it didn't matter who it was, whether it was a spouse, a family member, a friend, anybody. They were not allowed to treat you like this, and it was not okay for you to keep it a secret because it could destroy you. He always underestimated me, always put me down, treated me like I was dumb. Well, this little dummy managed to get that idiot on tape apologizing for raping me. Yeah. I might not have had DNA and it might have been a historical case, but it only took the 12 jury a few hours to come back with a unanimous vote of guilty.
Good.
None of his family were there because they didn't even think that he'd get charged. That is how arrogant they all were. He never even got up on the stand to defend himself. Not bad for this stupid, dumb hairdresser that really liked reality shows to be able to catch out the leaving out extremely high police rank at his own game. Must have been all that.
I hope that those are his words. She's throwing his words.
I'm
back
pretty sure because she says earlier he always treated me like I was dumb. Well, this okay. dummy. Yeah. Good. Must have been all that CSI and SVU that I love to watch that got me on that. Mate, when we had that recording, my girlfriend and I laughed out loud so fucking hard. It was like, I've got you, you motherfucker. Unfortunately, the kids, not the youngest, didn't see it that way. The oldest girl said, it's bad enough, but why does she have to tell people about it? He was the victim because he went to jail, apparently. He was so protected in there that no one could get near him because he was an ex-cop and because he used to work with intel in prisons and he used to do undercover with the bikies when he was a cop. So the filthy grub was with all the kiddie fiddlers and sex offenders instead of in general pop when they really would have taken care of his mongrel ass. One of my closest friends at the time, I no longer have anything to do with her. Hold on. Our husbands went through the academy together and was more concerned that it was what it was going to like. Yeah. So one of my closest friends at the time, who she no longer has anything to do with, was more concerned about what it was going to be like for him, an ex-cop, than for how I was. On the night of the verdict that was handed down, she told me this. And I tell you what, going through something like this certainly weeds out who's loyal to you, who's not, who's got your back and who's going to stand by you when things get horrendous. After 18 months, Voldemort was charged with 4 counts of historical rape, 2 of vaginal rape, 2 of anal rape, and he was only found guilty on the 2 charges of vaginal rape. He received a 5-year sentence, 5 years, only to serve 2.5 years in jail and then 2.5 as a suspended sentence. Mm. There are no winners in this case. Yes, an asshole rapist had been sent to prison, but 4 kids now had a convicted rapist, sex offending prisoner father. I have the most comprehensive DVO that the judge could lay down. He was released in 2021 to start serving his suspended sentence.
I just want to point out, it should go without saying, and I'm not sure if Juanita feels the same, that she is not to blame for her children having a rapist as a father.
I was going
to
say the absolutely exact not.
Same thing. Yeah, 100% correct.
Even regardless of what they think and what they say, that is, it's just in no way.
Their father chose to be a rapist.
Yep.
Correct.
Like that's, you know, but you can't, they didn't choose to have a relationship with somebody who chose to do that.
And I think speaking about the reaction of, like, friends and what have you, kind of supporting or like, oh, what's it going to be like for him in prison? Like, that's what we mean when we talk about like rape culture. Yes. It's like, oh, but what can't we think about what a conviction would mean for these men? I'm like, well, what is life going to be like for these women? Not only now that there's a conviction on the books, but what was life for them like as they had to live keeping this secret for someone who so horribly abused them.
No, you're right. Not just in this country, America as well. Time and time and time again, you'll see some dirty rapist in prison, like in court, like a Brock Turner, if that's a name.
That absolutely.
And then a judge will say, well, they have this promising life that we can't interfere with.
But what about his athletic career?
Yes, we can't. I mean, how long does it take to get raped? A couple of minutes? So you take that out of your life. No, you're right, Zane. Yeah. It's the abuse beforehand, it's during, it's afterwards. It's this whole cacophony.
Getting raped would affect someone's life forever.
Yes. And that's, I mean, I'm not sure how much longer we've got to go before I start kind of...
Very short amount of time.
Before I start soapboxing, but
okay.
I think that's... I'm worried that Juanita was worried so much about her children's reaction to this when surely them living in the same house in this situation could not have been pleasant.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. This atrocious process of dealing with the aftermath have pushed me to literally the end of my rope, causing me to be hospitalized on a number of occasions to a mental health facility for my own safety and well-being. I virtually have no relationship with 3 out of 4 of my children, but that is their choice. They're walking their own path and my door is always open should they wish to come through it. If you asked me if I would do this again, my answer would be a resounding hell yes. Good. For as I said in my victim impact statement, how much is someone's safety worth? How much is a wife worth? Just because someone is married to someone, does that give them the right to be able to take from them that which we are all entitled to as human beings, a feeling of safety and protection in our own homes? No one has the right to take the feeling of safety from another human being, to violate their body, their mind, their souls, or their space. Nobody. I know that you hear all the time, if I can just help one person, it will have been worth it. However, I truly know this to be true. As a friend that knew my story finally found strength in it and left her abusive partner and is now on the other side and doing wonderfully. And I am so grateful for her new life and positive outcome. No more do I have to worry about my laugh being too loud, my personality being too sparkly, getting too much attention, spitting and rinsing too many times when I clean my teeth. I shit you not, I was crucified for that one night. I couldn't even clean my own teeth correctly. I was trying to make happy memories for the kids and no longer did I have to worry about trying so hard. I worked 12 to 16 hours a day, 6 to 7 days a week, and somehow it was still not enough. I look back now and I think, geez, no wonder I'd get sick. It's no wonder I didn't get cancer from all of the stress. Now, I hope you haven't fallen into a ditch reading all of this and had to stick your head in the freezer to take a break, she says. I'm so
almost.
We got close. Sorry if it's a bit haphazard. I tried to keep things in order, although there's just so much. I'm now living out on a farm with all my animals around me, cows, sheep, goats, and of course my 3 trusty cats, trying to live my best life. Happiness is the best revenge. Enjoy your weekend, gang. Cheers, Juanita.
I think vehicular manslaughter might be the best revenge. And like, I'm not making any threats. It's quick, I'm just like, nuts. If we
I
kind
feel
of
like you're violating no threats on Mike, Zane.
It's too fast. I'm just saying, like,
if we weigh up the pros and cons,
it's too quick. It's too quick.
It was an accident. Mm. I just lost control of the car.
I just had a moment. Should I let a moment destroy my entire life?
Well, I mean, that kind of brings back to exactly the point is, like, should we let a moment destroy our entire life? Like, that assault, that rape, let's call it what it is, that rape. Yep. What is your life worth if you have to live with that every day in the same world with that person? Is it worth? Because, again, the way that it's ended up is it's been skewed by the people surrounding the family, so that the children that she was thinking about so much that she didn't seek help, didn't seek justice then, now are no longer in contact because of this event.
Yeah,
I feel like, as we pointed out earlier in the story, that Voldemort worked incredibly hard to poison the well against her from a very, very early time in their lives, right? Because, you know, why else? I'm sorry, but if I found out that my mother had been at the hand of such a brutal rape, I would be championing her from the hills for telling people about it, like not being like, why, that's so embarrassing.
I totally agree with you, Liz. But I can also see it where if you're a young man and you find out your dad is a rapist, where that would cause a conflict internally with you, where you would go, no, because that would mean I am, and I'm not, so he can't be. Or where you would defend this guy or his actions, not in the right.
Depending on how old you are, you might also be like, fuck, everyone in the school is going to think that I'm a rapist as well, or that, you know, like, or like, how embarrassing for me. Because when you're at that like 12, 13-year-old age, like everything is about you.
So I'm not. It sucks that not all your kids are talking to you right now, Janita. But I reckon give them time to figure it out, and they can come around potentially. It's fucking tricky and it's hard.
Look, even if during the process of this, of this coming out and finding your justice or whatever justice you could, 5 years is not enough, 2.5 is not even close. I think it would be totally understandable for you to become a pretty difficult person to be around as you're dealing with these issues. And again, I don't think that you can be faulted for going through that time in your life where you cannot hear this person's name and be a pleasant person to be around. That's totally normal, I would say.
Yep, you got a pass on that.
And it's going to be difficult for children to hear someone that they care about so much spoken about in such a way. I do think, though, that this is what we talk about with the Me Too movement, that we can't place the potential of men's lives being inconvenienced by women's abuse.
Mm-mm.
I don't think I said that correctly, but we can't. We have to believe when it comes out. We have to believe and take it to what it. Take it to the extent that,
and especially
we can.
Like even when it's proven, right? Like the Brock Turner thing. If we use that case as an example, it was proven that he did what he did, right? There's no.
That's why I said.
He was literally. There were witnesses, and even then, they don't punish him in a way that is in any way lined up with the crime to avoid ruining their life. I say in quote marks. So, like, even when they're is absolutely no doubt, we don't come down hard enough because they're like, oh, well, it's a couple of minutes. It will ruin their life. But you know what? A couple of minutes of trauma is enough to ruin somebody's life for the rest of
their
life. But
also that couple of minutes isn't isolated. Like they have a personality that supports their actions for that couple of minutes.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we've seen it time and time again, even here in Australia with victims like Hannah Clark, who was a woman in Brisbane whose husband had started out quite slowly but escalating in violence and ended up jumping into a car and murdering her and his children. These kind of acts escalate. They always do. It's one of those things where, like, you know, it started out in Juanita's relationship where he was just financial abuse and just ignoring her for a little bit. Then it was police cuffs. Then it was putting her in a police hold. And then it was brutal rape. And then it was isolating her in another country. Like, you know, if a person is okay, it's such a sliding scale, right? Like if a person is okay with one thing, it's very likely it will escalate.
What I would like to, I guess, put out there is that that escalation is the important thing to get in, to cut off early.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, Juanita with rose-colored glasses maybe didn't see the financial abuse, maybe didn't see the emotional abuse, but people around her did. She said that his sister was aware of some of it.
This is what I, yeah, like,
and
I,
like that is something that
that's I chilling think, to me.
Yeah, as a, just as a human being asking that question and just saying, hey, I don't know if I'm misinterpreting this, but I've seen this behavior and this behavior and I'm not comfortable with that. Can you explain where that's coming from? And even if they're like, oh no, everything's fine, even if it isn't, that lets them know that you're a safe place.
It's a weird, and it's a weird one because we don't like involving ourselves generally as human beings. We see someone getting knocked about over there or someone, we sort of don't want to get involved.
Well, yeah, statistically they say that people are more likely to help if you scream fire than if you scream help.
Yes, that's right. So, and this is a problem across humanity, not just with intimate relationships like this. But you're right, Zane, there's no downside for getting involved because either there's no problem here. Mm. No, there's no, you've misread the situation, X, Y, and Z happen. Things are totally fine. Thank you, your concern. Or, yeah, there is something here. So
see, there is a danger, though.
I know well, it's hard, but we...
The thing is that sometimes if you say, hey,
yes.
You know, I noticed this behavior, what's up about that, then they will be potentially embarrassed and try and cut that person out of their life so they don't have to be as embarrassed in front of them anymore, and then that's another support. Like, it's so difficult to... Because these people want to isolate you.
Well, and what I'm saying is not necessarily only doing it to the abuse victim.
Yeah.
As men and male-presenting people who have the privilege of being on the other side of rape culture, it's our responsibility to call it out and change that actively. So it's not just a matter of like letting... So if I was in this situation, it wouldn't just be my job to call out, to say, hey, Juanita, I'm a safe person. If you need help, let me know. Come stay at my house. It would be saying to Voldemort, hey, how you're treating her is not okay. Don't do that in front of me.
I would want to know if any men noticed, if any men in their lives noticed that behavior. I also wonder if it's that whole... Oh, I don't want to sound like an asshole, but like the police force is an incredibly masculine, locker talky place
it's
to
a,
be.
It's a culture, and it's going to there is friction, and you have to be confident enough in yourself to accept the friction that it's going to cause.
But fuck, how difficult would it be to call out anything that someone who is in a position of so much power, like oh, God, I wish I could just say what his job title was. So much power. So much power over not just her but over, you know, like he could have quite easily stopped her from leaving the country. He could have quite easily, you know, oh, man. Like, and the fact that he probably just had the sweetest fucking prison life ever. Anyway, look, what I want to say, Juanita, is thank you so much for writing in your story, for taking the time to – tell us all of that to, I guess, advance the conversation of family violence and escalating violence in situations and how different coercive control situations can lead to that kind of violence. And there's one thing, so when I was talking to Juanita via text to make sure that she was still okay with us sharing her story, she actually said to me, she said, I'm really sorry that you had to read that. And I was like, please do not apologize. I'm sorry that you had to go through that. And I think you are so wonderful and so brave and so incredible for not only standing up for yourself, but being willing to put your story out there, because I can guarantee you that there will be someone listening to this podcast today who recognizes even just an inch of their story in your story, and their wheels start to turn and they start to realize that they're in a situation that they're being abused, and this could be the start of them making that decision
I nearly guarantee it. Juanita, in this story, you were and have been so much stronger than me. I look at your story and I just see so much strength and willingness to survive that I don't have, right? And so so thank you for that. Thank you for having strength. Because I'm just baffled looking at that and going and applying my own. How would I deal with this? I don't fucking know how I could. How on earth do you bounce back from some of this stuff?
When I read this, honestly, like I just went and I went and sat on my porch for probably about an hour and just like stared at the sky because like I had no words. I was furious. I'm angry that, you know, things like this are still happening and still allowed to happen. I'm angry that people have to think of that people can't just think, you know, of themselves and how to get themselves out of it, that people feel like they have to stay in horrendous situations because of other people. I'm saying too many words that I have no words.
We all need to come away from this episode and unpack it and let it simmer. That's all of us at home, readers. You have to do the same as well. You have to. It's mandatory. After hearing a story like this,
you have to.
There's no buts around it. So as we're not going to do a lessons learned. Zane, do you have any final thoughts?
Just like to point out, I have something I'd like to point out and then a piece of advice I'd like to give.
Sure.
Something I'd like to point out is how uncomfortable growing up in a small town in a very masculine environment. I was probably more aware of what the interactions were because I was a queer kid.
Hmm.
This story made me uncomfortable with how much I identified with the culture that was being presented. The ease with which a husband can demean a wife in public in order to maintain control and kind of develop that kind of status over her and put her in a powerless position.
Hmm.
That hits a place in me that I feel very ashamed to be able to relate to. I would like to think that, well, I've never known any convicted rapists.
No.
I can't say that I've never known any rapists or that anyone I've known has committed rape.
Sure.
But reading this story, a lot of those symptoms have happened in front of me that I have not called out. Because I wasn't in a place then to identify that kind of scale of escalation.
Isn't that interesting, though, when you just said, I don't know any convicted rapists, but I know, like, I know rapists. I know not a single convicted rapist, but I know rapists.
Yeah.
That's fucked. That's fucked. I didn't even think of that.
Everyone does. Yeah.
Am I wrong? Am I weird? Should I? Hmm.
Well, no, that's a story for another day. Yes. But yeah, I think, and that's really what I'm taking away from this is it's on everyone to be on the lookout and be the strength that we want. Reading through that story, we wanted Juanita to find that impetus to get justice.
I was fucking cheering when she said she packed her bag. Like my brain was going, yes, girl, get the fuck out of there.
Yeah. And it's like all the way through. And so I think we need to carry that through just in regular life so that even if we're having a good time and then something happens and we're like, oh, I don't want to wreck this good time by pulling us down with that. Like we really have to make a conscious effort to do it. My advice is if you're in a situation similar to Juanita's and you feel that there isn't evidence, you haven't got a recording, you are not in a position to go to the hospital or the police after an incident, keep a diary.
Yes.
In some way, just writing down, today I rinsed and spat too much in the sink and I got a 10-minute yelling at. And just that will be
the diary of escalation.
Yeah.
And look, I would advise, now that we have such wonderful technology, they used to say time and date it, but if you literally, it's metadata, if you put that in notes on a computer and something password protected or something like that, if you can, because then they know that you wrote it and felt it and it happened, you know, when you said it did.
Make an email address send it to yourself at that same email.
That's actually a great idea because then you don't have to keep it on your phone. Just send it to your
But yeah, and that's like if you truly feel that there's no one that you can turn to, firstly, write to us and then keep a diary.
Because you're documenting crimes or assaults or whatever or misdemeanors.
It's a history of invisible transgressions. Yeah.
So after a year goes by, you've not written one diary entry, you've written 25, and there's a important list of history to return to. I don't know. If you listen to this story and weren't affected by it, none of it resonated with you, because I heard this story and it echoed around my ribs and my internal structure and my brain and it affected me physically, shaking during it. And I'm not trying to claim a gold star or I'm just trying to say
it should absolutely affect everyone, and that doesn't mean that you have to identify with it. That's a very different thing.
Yep, absolutely.
But this is something that should affect anybody. I cannot explain how thankful I am to Juanita for having the bravery to put all of that down on paper, not only to live it but to put it out there so that she might be able to help one extra person. If you have any stories that you would love to share with us that you think might help other people, that is all what we are trying to do on this podcast. We are trying to make people at home feel like they are not alone. And also, I guess if you have any messages you would like to pass on to Juanita, we can make sure that they get to her too.
Absolutely.
In the meantime, I'm not going to do the usual sign off because I think this has been a heavy episode, but just call out things as you see them, and I think the world will hopefully get better one day if we do that.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There are known knowns, known unknowns, and unknown unknowns. But there are also unknown knowns. The Ancient and Esoteric Order of the Jackalope is a secret society devoted to unearthing and sharing this forgotten knowledge. Each episode, we take one of these strange stories and share it with you. No topic is off limits, except for the obvious. Available wherever fine podcasts are sold.